Hey, it's Scott Petrak with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns beat the Jaguars on Sunday to snap a two-game skid, improve to 8-5, and they hold the number five seed in the AFC playoff race. And perhaps most importantly, Joe Flacco played great at quarterback. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
Scott, how are you? Big win over Jacksonville. And I think what I appreciate most about it is the fact that, along this journey of the season, along the ride, I think we've done a pretty good job of not panicking and, just realizing that this team had the capability to be where they're at right now. They didn't put a three-game losing streak together, which really could have hurt. Although even if they lost last week, they'd still be in it. But the bottom line is that was a huge win for them. And with the way the rest of the weekend went for the NFL, they're in a really good spot right now. And, I think if you're looking big picture and just enjoying the ride, you're feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And we talked about it last week. You really couldn't afford to let two losses turn into three. And I mean, you could from a, from the standings, right? They'd still be 7-6. They'd still be in the playoff seed, but you had to stop the negative momentum somehow. And that was the right way to do it. Again, they overcame adversity, right? We've been talking about it all year long. Denzel Ward doesn't start again. Juan Thornhill, the safety, goes out with a calf injury after the inactives. So they kind of play a man down because he was active, but he couldn't play because he injured his calf before the game or tweaked the calf. You lose Ethan Posick, your center, on the second drive. So there was a lot. They played without right tackle DeJuan Jones, and that was a late in the week injury. So again, there's a lot of stuff for the Browns to overcome. Trevor Lawrence starts for the Jaguars. And, 6 days after the high ankle sprain. So a lot of stuff going against them. You had the two-game skid, but you get back home. They're really good at home. The defense plays better at home. And then Joe Flacco plays really well, right? So you kind of summarize it. They're 8-5. And I think, Judd, like we talked at the beginning of the season, we thought they were a playoff caliber team. We didn't know if they'd get there. We thought they'd be around, what, 9, 10, 11 wins. I don't know if anyone could have predicted that they'd be 8-5 given everything they've gone through, and Joe Flacco your starting quarterback on December 12th.
Wow, man. Everything you just said there, I could go in five or six different directions. Like, I could say, hey, let's talk Stefanski. Does he deserve to be coach of
Right?
the year because of that? We'll talk about that later. I could say, hey, injuries. It's amazing they're doing this with all the injuries. We'll get to that later. I can say, hey, Flacco, this is amazing. We're going to get to that quickly. But before we do that, I have to say, man, we had this one. We both picked the Browns to win in low scoring games. And then we didn't do another podcast, but on Sunday morning, if you follow us on Twitter, you and I both changed our score and made it a higher scoring game, and they won. I mean, we were kind of all over this one. We're not always all over it, but we were on this one. That's how I want to start. I want to pat ourselves on the back.
Fair enough. Yeah, it just felt like you could have made the switch, right? With Trevor Lawrence starting, you could have made the switch to Jacksonville because when we taped it early in the week, it looked so bad, right? We watched what happened Monday night. Couldn't walk off the field, looked like he wasn't going to play. And then obviously they give him the go ahead to play. I'm watching him one more pregame and he's doing these hard sprint rollouts, so he looks fine. So it would have been fair to change the pick because he's that important to the Jaguars. But I just like the Browns coming off the two-game skid. And but you had to raise, I felt you had to raise the expectations for points because both teams were really banged up in the secondary. I mean, that was a lot of it. Denzel Ward, I mentioned Ward and Thornhill. The Jaguars were without, I think, three of their top corners. One guy's on IR, and then the other two were inactive. It just felt like the weather was fine. It just felt like a game where you could see some points. And then, turnovers are always the X factor, right? And that led to a bunch of short fields for both teams, which also increases the chance for points.
All right, let's get into it. Joe Flacco, the story continues. What a ride it's been. I mean, it's like a movie script almost. What a performance by him. Number one, are you surprised? Number two, can he keep it going?
It's funny. I was just writing down on my little notepad here, is it sustainable? I wanted to make sure we talked about that. First of all, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm surprised. The guy hadn't played football in 11 months. He wasn't on a team. He wasn't in training camp. He's thrown to his brother on a football field in New Jersey. Like, right? Like, it's hard to say, yeah, okay, this guy's going to come in and throw for five touchdowns and 565 yards in the first two starts. Like, that just seems unlikely. If everybody knew he could have done that, he'd be on another team right now, right? The Browns would have signed him earlier. Like, they would have gone with him instead of PJ Walker if you really thought that Joe Flacco was capable, because I think you could get your head around him capable of doing this. But that it was likely, no, it was not unlikely. It was not, it didn't figure like that would happen. But then switching gears, is it sustainable? I don't see why not. Like, I worry about, if you're a Browns fan, I think you can worry about him getting hurt. He's 38. He doesn't move great. Maybe he's going to take some hits. Is he going to break down? But he only needs to get through four more games to get to the playoffs, right? So you're not asking him to start 17 for you. I think that helps. But just watching him, he throws it as well, maybe not as well, but he still throws it great. I should ask him if he throws it as well as he ever did, because he has been, in his throughout his career, one of the best pure throwers of the ball, right? Since he was drafted in 2008. So he still has that skill. It's become clear he still processes really quickly and at a high level, and uses all the experience that he has through his 15 plus years in the league to dissect a defense, read a defense, know where to go with the ball. And then, to me, the biggest unknown that has really impressed me and makes me think this can be sustainable is he has enough movement skills. And he's never been a big, he's never been Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Justin Fields, right? But on that fourth and three touchdown to David Bell, he moves three or four steps to his right and then makes the throw back across the middle. Like, if he was just a statue, that play probably turns into a sack because the Jaguars are blitzing one more than the Browns can block. But yet he buys enough time and makes a throw. They can run the play action rollouts, the play action bootlegs. Like, you need some athletic ability to run those plays. He's not all shotgun, stand in the pocket. So that has impressed me at 38 with this time off. So yeah, I think it is sustainable, Chud. I think the way Kevin Stefanski calls a game, the way the Browns offense is set up, it does feel sustainable to me. Now, I'll throw in one caveat. They better protect him. And that's going to be an issue because, Jedd Wills, the junior, is still not back from the knee sprain. He's on IR. Maybe he practices this week. We don't know that yet. But then they just lost right tackle DeJuan Jones for the season with a torn MCL. So they were without both those guys against the Jaguars. So they made it work. So, but you just, that needs to continue. They need to still protect him as they go forward, as they get deep into their depth across the offensive line.
How are they getting it done on the offensive line right now? It's incredible, the story.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I think Jerron Christian is playing better than people would hope. Now, I don't think, I think it's a wrong narrative to say he's playing better than Jedd Wills. I don't think he is. They're giving a bunch of help. And Jedd Wills, for all his slights, they didn't help him a lot. Like, they left him on an island and he usually held up. They're giving Jerron Christian a lot of help. I think they give James Hudson a good amount of help. So that reduces what you can do in the passing game, right? When you're helping both tackles. So that's something they'll have to continue to adapt to. And I think it's Joe Flacco making quick decisions, getting the ball out of his hand, right? Like, he knows the clock. So, you don't see him running around like Deshaun Watson, right? Like, trying to extend plays. It's all right, if it's not here, I'm throwing the ball away because, I don't want to get hit. I don't want to take sacks. I know how quickly I have to get rid of the ball. And then when I want to take deep shots, they go max protection and they help the tackles. You saw a lot of, like, I started rewatching the game. I haven't watched all of it, but I'm into the second quarter. not only are they helping the tackles with tight ends and running backs, they're swinging the guards over, right? So, like, they try to hold down the middle and then help the guards try to get to the outside and help. So they're doing all they can. I think that's a credit to the coaching staff. It's a credit to these guys coming off the bench and to be able to play. That includes Nick Harris, who came in at center. But yeah, that's one of the bigger stories, Chud, is how they're able to, I mean, it's win games, period, right? With all these big injuries, but perform at a relatively high level across the offensive line when to finish that game Sunday, the only two original starters were your guards, Joe Bitonio and Wyatt Teller.
One thing I like about Flacco, just being the veteran, he limits his mistakes. He throws the ball away when he needs to. I know he's had a couple mistakes, but gosh, I mean, you can't really fault him for having maybe one. It's not multiple. That's the bottom line. But also, you brought up that David Bell touchdown, and
Yeah.
tell me if I'm wrong here, but just watching it, the first thing I thought about when I saw the replay was you had mentioned how he moved and took a couple steps. One thing I thought about was if that was a rookie quarterback or someone that wasn't a veteran, he saw both defenders. And I can't remember who it was, but did you see how two defenders went to the same receiver
Yeah.
and that left out wide open? And I think that's a veteran presence that sees that and makes that happen.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think there's multiple examples of that, Chud. And I'm not, at the second, I'm not remembering what it was, but there's a play in the game where I thought to myself, DTR just doesn't make that play because he doesn't. And that's not a slight on DTR. It's just he doesn't have the experience that Flacco does, right? But Flacco, the whole slowing down thing, right? Things he processes quicker than a rookie would. And he sees that. He sees, okay, here's the safety, here's this, here's that. And I just think you see it time and again. He takes advantage of, and there's a million things we can talk about with Flacco. But for instance, Amari Cooper will be one-on-one on the outside, and the corner was playing 10 yards off. He just throws a 6-yard hitch to Amari Cooper. And it's an easy completion. It's a good chunk of yardage, and it puts you in a good spot. And he trusts his arm to get it out there fast enough. He trusts Cooper to be on the same page. If the corner's playing outside leverage, they run slants and they hit a bunch of those slants. And those are pretty easy throws for Flacco to make, but they're easy completions that help you move the chains, help you establish momentum, and then you can take some big shots. You can run the ball. You could do so much off of that. And they even went, and I was surprised about this, Chud. They went to some RPOs, right? The whole run pass options. And my guess is Joe Flacco hasn't run a ton of those in his career. That's a relatively recent development in the NFL. They do it in college, where you call a run play, but then there's a pass option off of that. And the offensive line doesn't even know. The offensive line's blocking for a run, but if the quarterback sees something, it's usually the linebacker's bite, then he pulls the ball and makes a quick throw. And I think they ran like a handful of those the other day. And that's got to be something new for Joe, but he's picking it up. It worked. They were able to run, they completed a couple passes. He handed off to Jerome Ford one time. The exchange was a little funky, but it still worked for yardage. So that's just him being smart enough to do whatever the coaches are asking him to do.
Do you think moving forward we're going to see more of the Wildcat package and maybe DTR get a few more snaps in some form?
Chud, I have some strong opinions about this. And Mary Kay Cabot, my esteemed colleague and friend, we go back and forth about this all the time. I do not like the whole we're going to use two quarterbacks things, two quarterbacks thing. I don't like it. I think you got to start a quarterback for a reason. Let him throw the ball, let him play. I don't like taking him in and out, shuffling it in and out of the lineup. Having said that, this is a unusual circumstance. Right, you're on your fourth quarterback. You have this rookie that was a starter. So, like, I didn't love putting DTR in to hand off to Kareem Hunt. Right, like that was he played two snaps. That was the first snap. Like, you could have Flacco hand off. Now, I get it. If DTR's in the game, the defense is supposed to account for him as a runner. So, okay. But then the second time they used him, like that made sense, right? It was short yardage. They put him in. He ran around the end and picked up a first down. Like, that's the right way to use him. So if it's three plays a game in like really specific situations, that's fine. If it becomes a bigger package than that, I don't like that. Especially the way Flacco's playing, right? Like you don't, to me, you don't need to get fancy here because he's playing really well. So it's not like you got to design some crazy stuff because you just drop him back and let him throw the ball. So a couple plays sprinkled in is fine, but I don't think it should be more than that. And overall, I'm anti two quarterbacks.
Isn't it incredible how much heat and we were on them that the Browns took for, the whole Dobbs situation? Now he gets benched in Minnesota and we're riding the Flacco train.
Right?
Oh man, so funny. I mean, it's just crazy how it works. I mean, I don't know. All I'm gonna say is, and this is, at the beginning of this, I said, hey, hopefully you've enjoyed the ride. Don't panic when you lose two in a row out
Right.
west. Yeah, it would have been nice to get a win. But I am also going to say, I can't envision a scenario where, Flacco takes a step back, and we have to remember the guy has been out of football and things won't always be so rosy.
Yeah, that's fair, right? Like, yeah, yes, that's completely fair. Is he going to throw for, well, I was going to say, is he going to throw for 250 game? Maybe not. But, Chuddy's thrown for 250. I think it's six of his last seven starts. And that spans like 3 years. But that means that he can throw the ball. Like, regardless of wins and losses, he's with the Jets. He went only 1-8 as starter with the Jets, I think. He's thrown for 250. Like, that feels pretty sustainable to me. Now, are there interceptions sprinkled in? Perhaps. If the one the other day wasn't his fault, Tillman got ran into a defender and he had already thrown the ball. Now, the strip sack, he probably should have seen that blitzer coming, and I blame Flacco for that. So, yeah, is he going to play great for the next four games and make it six total? Probably not. But can they overcome that and win with the defense and with the running game? Like, that's what they're going to need to do, right? They're going to need to ham and egg it. That's what they've been doing all season long. It's you can win without your quarterback playing great. They've done that this year. We've seen it across the league. So, yeah, it's there should be no panic if he comes out against the Bears or the Jets or pick a team and doesn't have a great game. Like, that doesn't mean he's lost it, right? It's just the way the NFL works. You got to try to win regardless. But I do think overall, like, I trust Joe Flacco, and that seems crazy, but I do. I think he's given hope to this entire, it should be the entire fan base, right? But I definitely think within the locker room, like, I think these guys saw him even before he played. They said, hey, this, when they signed him after the Watson injury, even though he's on the practice squad, even though he's on the bench that first game and didn't play, I felt a sense of, hey, we got a guy, right? Like, yeah, we're with DTR now, and that's fine, but we have a guy if we need him, and they needed him quicker than they thought. But, like, I always felt that way. And then he gets out there and throws it, and that reaffirms it. He gets out there and plays against the Rams, it reaffirms it again. And then he wins a game, and that's like the final step in this affirmation process. So, I Chud, and it's going to sound crazy, and I'm not like Mr. Rah-Rah guy. I can see them getting to the playoffs with Joe Flacco, right? Like, that's all they need is two more wins. They get to the playoffs. And then I could see him winning a playoff game. Like, that doesn't seem out of the realm to me because with this defense, with this running game, if they get, I mean, let's assume there's some health there to the whole roster. And with him playing the way he is with the coaching staff, like, I don't see why he couldn't go win a playoff game somewhere. He's 10-5 in his career in the playoffs. Like, I think there is a trust factor there and a confidence that comes with that.
Well, I'll tell you, when you see Miami lose on Monday Night Football to Tennessee, and Kansas City loses, and I guess my gut tells me the Browns are still not at the level of some of those teams in the AFC. But boy, but then when you look at the standings, then you start to get a little excited. Like, well, maybe why can't they maybe do something in the playoffs? I'm just conflicted on that
Right.
because while I don't necessarily think they can go to the Super Bowl, then part of me is like, man, I mean, maybe they could do something in the playoffs. But here's the thing, though. This is what I go back to. They're just, and I have this written down as one of my main points. Scott, they're just a much different team at home. I mean, if they're on the road in a playoff game, I mean, I don't have any faith or trust that they can go on the road and win a big playoff game right now. They're just a different team at home.
No, that's a great point. They're gonna, I mean, unless the Ravens, I was gonna say collapse, but that's too strong. Unless the Ravens come back to the pack, which is possible. They have a tough schedule, the Ravens coming up. But unless the Ravens come back, I mean, they got a 2-game lead. There's 4 games left. The only way means the Browns are going to have to start on the road, right? Like, unless they win a division, the Browns are going to have to start on the road. So they're going to have to figure out a way to go win on the road. And they're going to have two more chances. I mean, they're going to go to Houston on Christmas Eve, and then they're going to Cincinnati in the finale. And at least one of those games is going to be really important. I don't know if the Cincinnati game, who knows how that's going to shape up. It could shape up as a win or end game, right? Who knows the way the Bengals are playing.
The Bengals are
Joe
not
Burrow.
Dead.
Exactly.
They're
And
not dead.
They won two in a row with Jake Browning, right?
That
so
everyone counted them out.
I
they're not out.
No, they're not.
But yeah.
Right. So my point is they're going to have to win games on the road. Well, they won't have to. They could probably go 2-0 at home and lose 2 on the road and still get to playoffs. But they're going to have two more chances to prove that they can win on the road in a pressure situation. Just real quick, the Ravens, they go at Jacksonville, at San Francisco, versus Miami, Ooh. Versus Pittsburgh. So there's not a gimme on there, right? Like, Pittsburgh you would think is a gimme, and maybe it is. But we've seen Pittsburgh beat the Ravens plenty of times. So, I mean, it's not, and I hate to play this look ahead, but I'm going to do it anyway. They could lose their next 3 games, right? Which drops them to 10-6, and the Browns could easily be 10-6, right, going into the finale. So I'm not ruling out the AFC North. I'm just saying odds are it's a wild card for the Browns, and they're going to have to go on the road and beat somebody. A Jacksonville, a Kansas City, could be a Baltimore, right? I think those are the likely teams. Could be Miami. Those are the four teams that it feels most likely they'd have to go on the road to beat.
Well, we'll go back and hit a couple other topics back to the game. But since we're talking about this now, let's stick with this theme. So you look at these last 4 games for the Browns. I mean, all four are winnable, but they could slip in all four as well. I mean, Chicago, 5-8, but they've won 3 of their last 4. Don't sleep on them. That Jets game, I've always thought that Jets game was a trap because they have a good defense and it worries me. But it is at home, so I feel good about that in that regard. The Houston game, though, now becomes, even though it's on the road, they're dealing with some serious injuries at wide receiver, and also Stroud got hurt. And then,
concussion,
but then the Bengals game. So it's funny how the Houston game looked like it was a rough one. Now the Houston one looks better than the Bengals game. The Bengals game looks, but this could all change in 2 weeks. I mean, that's the NFL. It's constantly changing. You never know. But the bottom line, that's why this win was so big, because now you get 2 more wins. Just go 2-2, and you get the magical 10th win.
It's all of that is exactly right. The league changes every week. What you think about it, how you think about it changes every week. I said the other day to somebody, every game is winnable and every game is losable, right? And that's the whole any given Sunday thing. But I feel it is more applicable than ever this season, especially with the Browns. Right, like they have enough injuries where they could go out and lose and be like, oh, that's why they lost. Yet they also have won enough games where you think they can beat anybody. Right, we've seen them beat good teams. We've seen them beat San Francisco. Saw them win in Baltimore. Right, so that's a good Jacksonville team they beat. So yeah, it comes down to how do you play on that game day? Do you limit turnovers or get a bunch of takeaways? Because that's huge, and the Browns have been bad in that category. And do you play best in the critical moments, right? Does your kicker make a 55-yarder to go up 31-21? Do you go 3-for-3 on fourth down, right? Like those are the separators, and those are going to continue to be the separators as the Browns finish out this season. And if you talk about any given Sunday, any given Monday, all you have to do is look at the Monday night games, right? I thought those are going to be two dog games. I wind up watching both of them on the Manning cast, and the Giants come back to beat the Packers at the buzzer, and the Titans scored 2 touchdowns in the last 3 minutes to beat Miami, who was the number one seed in the AFC before that game, right? And yes, Tyreek Hill was in and out of the lineup. Miami should still beat Tennessee, right? Like, I don't think anybody, I don't know what the spread was. The spread had to be 9. It was at home.
It
It
was
was in
like
Miami, right?
14.
It was in
It was
Miami. Yeah, it's 14, right?
almost two touchdowns, 13
Right?
or 14. It was incredible. Yeah.
Right. So all you need to do is see those games. Tennessee's out of the playoff chase, pretty much, right? They were 4-8, I think. So that just shows you. You have to show up, you have to play hard, and you have to play hard for 60 minutes. As cliche as that sounds, that's all true.
Yeah. So what? So you have a Browns team. We're never in this situation in December, and the last time we were, fans couldn't even go.
Yeah,
explain right. to me why so many empty seats on Sunday. I hear the tailgating wasn't as large as it usually is. There was plenty of orange seats, empty seats there Sunday. Scott, what happened? Ticket prices? It was kind of cheap to get a ticket on Sunday.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, I don't have a great answer for you there. I know that there were empty seats, like a good amount. I didn't count them. But, you got to the upper parts of the upper deck. There were a lot of orange seats. I know somebody showed me that you could get a, ticket, game day ticket for like $12 on the resale market. I don't know. I don't know if it was two losses in a row. I don't know if it was, that you're on your fourth quarterback. Do people hadn't bought into Joe Flacco yet? I don't know if it's December, you got a lot of stuff to do, right? Maybe you're worried about the weather. I don't know, but it was surprising. And you would hope, fans can do whatever they want, right? Like, I thought about maybe I should write something about that. And I'm like, hey, I'm never going to pick on the fans. It's their money, they can spend it however they want. And we know that Browns fans are passionate, right? That's never a question. So, whatever. But you would expect and hope for the Browns' sake, I think, and just for the atmosphere's sake, that a bunch of them show up, that it's a packed house on Sunday against Chicago because it's a big game. It should be a good game. The Browns have played great at home. They're 6-1. They feed off the energy of the crowd. So that feels like a play. This feels like a game where everybody should be, all the seats should be filled. Like, it should be a hot ticket. And we'll have to see if it is on Sunday.
How about that defense? They came up, even though at the end of the day it was a high scoring game, the defense, they set the tone, I feel. Flacco set the tone, the defense set the tone. It felt like, again, the defense is so much different at home.
It is. And, Denzel Ward misses third straight game. And it's a price some people, he was listed as questionable. He'd practiced in a limited basis. I think it was, I don't know if it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, at least Thursday, Friday. I think it was all week. And so I think we started to feel like an expectation that he'd play. Even though I had, in the back of my head, I talked to Greg Newsome Thursday, and he said, like, yeah, it'd be great to get him back, but we want him 100%. And if he's not 100%, we don't want him out there. We care about him as a person. And that kind of stuck in my head, like, hey, maybe Ward's not ready. And, he's got the shoulder injury, so he can run around to practice, but it's different than taking on blockers, trying to make a tackle, right? And I know that they test the strength in that shoulder probably every day, Kevin Stefanski said, to see if it's where it needs to be. So, anyway, my point is, he doesn't play. That's a setback. I mentioned Juan Thornhill, yet Martin Emerson Jr. comes out and gets two picks. Greg Newsome the second gets a pick. Za'Darius Smith with a sack on the first drive of the game. So I did think the defense made a bunch of big plays. And, yeah, they gave up 27. But two of those drives, they got it's the same pattern all year. Jacksonville gets a turnover and gets the ball deep in Browns territory. Now, they need to be better about holding teams to field goals instead of touchdowns. And Jim Schwartz has been saying that all year. And they're still giving up touchdowns after turnovers. And that's got to stop. But they're put in a tough spot. You got a PI call on that last touchdown. So, I do think the defense played better than the 27 points. And I think you're right. I think they set a tone early. And, at a couple points, they were up 14-0, then it's 21-7. And then there's turnovers. And those turnovers allowed Jacksonville to stay in the game.
How about Grant Delpit? What do you think about the contract?
Yeah. Well, first of all, he's got a groin injury, left in the groin injury. Now,
yeah.
Right? And it feels like and we don't have confirmation, and we're taping this Tuesday morning. Maybe we'll get some injury news today, or if not, as we go through the week. Just in a statement, he's like, statement about the contract. He said, "Yeah, it's unfortunate the injury. I'm working this hard to get back ASAP." That doesn't sound like a guy that's playing Sunday, right? That sounds like a guy that's going to miss at least one game. Hopefully, he avoids IR, because IR would cost him the final four regular season games. So we'll have to see where that plays out. But from a contract extension standpoint, it makes sense, right? They spent a second round pick on him. It was Andrew Berry's first draft. Andrew Berry's second draft pick after Jed Wills Jr. And he's played well. So, right, the goal is you draft guys, they play well, you keep them, right? You re-sign them. So from that standpoint, it makes all the sense in the world. I do think Delpit, he had the Achilles as a rookie, didn't play at all. He hit or miss his second year. I thought last year, toward the end of the season, he started to show up. And, like, there was a big difference in his play, and I just wondered if that was sustainable, right? I needed to see more consistency. And I've seen that this year. I thought he got off to a good start. I think he's played well pretty much all season. And we saw it against Jacksonville on Sunday. There was a sack he made where he came flying through that line, right? And he's got a lot of speed. He's got a lot of size. I mean, the reason he was like the Thorpe winner in college, right? Because he's big and he runs great. So, and I like his attitude. He's a physical player. He's good at the line of scrimmage against the run. So it makes sense. The only doubt I had about them doing that was they already paid Juan Thornhill 3 years, $21 million last offseason, right? And I didn't know if they would pay both safeties. And they decided to do that. Now, it's temporary. It could be temporary. Like Thornhill, it's almost like a 2 year deal, right? The guaranteed money. So maybe it's just 2024, they pay both. And then it becomes Delpit's the one safety they pay, and they kind of go cheaper on the other safety. So that was the only question I had. But I think it makes sense because you don't want to let your good players get away.
Someone asked me what I thought about the signing and if it was maybe a little too much money. And I got to be honest, I'm just immune after the Watson deal. It's like,
Right.
hey, just throw it out there. I mean, what is it? I mean, I know I'm half kidding, but you know what I mean? I feel like when I was younger and a kid, it was easier to keep track of salaries than it
Yeah.
is now. It's just, you know what I mean?
I
I don't know.
do. I do. I mean, I think it ranks in the top whatever with safeties. Like, that's the going rate for a safety contract extension. And I do think the Browns are relying, and there was reports over the weekend that the salary cap is going to take a huge jump. And they factor that in. We know that they rolled over a bunch of space. They're kicking the Deshaun Watson can down the road as far as they can. At some time, it might come back and bite them, right? They're going to have to cut a bunch of guys or, go into rebuilding. But they're not anywhere close to that. And they're just going to keep paying guys. And, if you're a fan, how can you have any issue with that?
All right, I'm going to challenge you right now, Scott, because
Yeah.
if we talk about every single thing, this thing will go 2 hours.
Right,
So,
we'll be here forever.
yeah, right, because there's so much to hit. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you three names,
Okay.
and I'm going to tell you to keep it between 20 and 30 seconds for each person. All right, yeah, and I
Yeah.
want you to go bronze, silver, gold. Okay, these three guys are going to. It's almost like Petrak's game balls, right?
All right.
So you got to go short, like 30 seconds on each guy, give out a medal. All right. But I'm going to leave Flacco out of this because I know he would get the gold and he'd get the number one game ball. So I'm going to go three guys we maybe have mentioned but haven't dove into yet. And first thing I'm going to do is because you don't know, would you like to guess who the three names are?
I like this. I like this, Chud. I'm gonna go David Njoku, Martin Emerson, and I'm gonna go Corey Bojorquez.
You know what? That's a good one. I had people texting me on Sunday, like this punter, and like, what an it, maybe, boy, I'll tell you. I'll let you throw him. How about this? All right, here's what I'm going to do. Because actually, you nailed the first two, okay?
Okay.
Which leads me to believe you'd give the bronze to this next person, but it was Hopkins, okay?
I
Because
was going back
again,
and forth. Yeah.
yeah. So why don't we put Bjorkes and Hopkins together? So you have to pick them as a unit. And
Yeah.
then Njoku and Emerson, you're on the clock, so you gotta do it in 30 seconds each guy.
Okay, we'll start with the bronze. We'll We'll go with the leg man. Hopkins, clutch again. We're going to talk Stefanski a little bit, but that's a bold decision to try to kick a 55-yarder there. Fourth quarter, 3.5 minutes left, and he nails it. And the only reason Stefanski trusted him is because he was 7 for 7 on 50-yarders. Now he's 8 for 8. And Bohorquez has flipped the field all year long, and he had a huge punt. Browns are backed up. He flipped it, and it helped him win the field position all game long. Silver, I'm going to go MJ Emerson is a silver. Two picks, really important, obviously. They won the turnover battle, which they've struggled to do all year long, and the Browns turned it over 3 times. So to get four turnovers was huge, right? To get four takeaways really allowed them to come out with the victory. Emerson on top of that with two, and they dedicated the game to Denzel Ward, so good for them. Then Njoku, I don't think he caught a pass in the second half, but he did enough in the first half to give the Browns the lead, to get the confidence going, to get Joe Flacco in a good rhythm. And now the first touchdown, it's 3rd and 1, and nobody covered him. But like I said to Tom Withers, you know Tom Withers, AP writer, we used to do TV together.
Oh, yeah.
I said to him, I go, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody as wide open as David Njoku just was. And he goes, well, I think you're being a little hyperbolic there. But I'm not sure I was. He ran down the field from the 34-yard line and nobody went with him. So he's pretty wide open. But he made that and then he catches a crossing route, stiff arm, scores, 2 touchdowns, 6 catches, 91 yards. It's the kind of performance you're looking for from him because he has all that talent and it's his first 2-touchdown game. And you just feel like it could be the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, when we talked about him a couple weeks ago, like he's kind of like the second option right now, you know? I have David Bell on line one about being wide open.
That was, I mean,
Yeah.
again, that was a big, I mean, that was a good a breakdown on defense, but it was a good play on offense. Flacco found him.
Yeah. Those were the days, man, back when on Channel 3 we did the pregame huddle with Tom Withers and that we had a lot of fun doing
That
that.
was fun.
No question. All right, I got like three more things here to hit, and then we'll move on to the prediction. The refs. I mean, Myles Garrett, strong comments there.
Yeah, I'm glad I just made that note to myself. I'm like, we have to talk about Miles on this podcast. Here's my key points on this, Judd. Number one, I don't like when coaches and players and media go after the officials and put so much focus on them. I think it detracts from the enjoyment of watching the game. If we're focused on every chance, every time they might miss a call, like I don't enjoy watching the game like that. So that's my number one statement is I think we should give the refs a break. I'm not saying they make great calls all the time because they don't. And I think some are newsworthy, right? Some are calls are so newsworthy, you have to discuss them. But I don't like the constant discussion, the constant theme. I think it detracts from the game and the viewing experience. And we know that most of the calls are right, and we know that these guys are trying their hardest. These men and women are trying their hardest to get the calls right. So that's my overriding point. Having said that, I understand the frustration from Myles Garrett. I know he gets held a bunch. He was saying he was getting illegal hands to the face. I'm going back and watching. I haven't noticed any drastic when I've been watching through the first quarter and a half, but also, you know, they're not focused on Myles Garrett. He could be getting a hand to the, you know, under his face mask every play, and it doesn't always show up on TV. So I get the frustration, and I think he's probably trying to help himself get some calls down the road, and it may or may not work, and he's probably willing to pay the fine that I assume is going to come with the public criticism of the officials. So I get it. And there was one obvious call during the game, and I looked, I said, oh my God, he's getting held, and there's no call, and the official's looking right at it, and I don't understand that, and I know my buddies complain about it every game, how often he gets held, it shows up on TV. So I get the frustration. I just don't love him expressing it publicly.
Yeah, my concern is whenever I see that is, and I'm worried it's going to hurt him negatively, but maybe not. I guess we'll see. So funny that you just say that on my phone. Literally, an alert just comes by
comes on the phone and Patrick Mahomes regrets his outburst in right. the Chiefs game. You know, and I'm sure most people listening to this saw that and how crazy he went, and Andy Reid as well. So,
well, they were wrong. Like, they were wrong. Like I don't even if it's a bad call, I think you should be careful about what you say. Certainly, yeah. You have to be careful when the call was right and they're complaining about it.
Yeah, well, if you go to that call, it's interesting. Number one, I think you're spot on with your take. I think that's a really good way to look at it. But if you do go digging on Twitter and you watch, I think it was Dan or is it Orlau Dan?
Yeah, Orlowski.
Orlowski. Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was Orlowski or Orlowski. I mean, obviously, I know who it is, but I was just brain fart there with the exact pronunciation. I mean, everyone should have a last name like Chudowski. It's just a lot easier. But anyway. But he pointed out on Twitter, if you go and find him, made a good point that he went and watched the whole game and saw that Kadarius Toney did that five times during the game. And they never called it one time, but then they called it on that play. So basically his point is you either got to call it on every play or don't call it just on that one. So I found that to be interesting.
That is interesting. It really is.
Yeah. So if you really go and do the research on this play, you know, but then Andy Reid backtracked because you're right. I mean, it's clear that that was a penalty, right. But you know, but
yeah,
then
I wonder
the
if it was as egregious on all five, you know, like, I don't know if it was, then yeah, if it was, and they should have called it earlier, it doesn't mean he should still line up in the wrong spot in the last play. Right. Like, I see
no,
both
agreed.
Sides of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, someone else I saw on Twitter made a good point. I'm not going to take credit for this. I can't remember who it was, but you know, listen, the Chiefs have gotten calls in their day, right?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
So, and you know, I mean, I don't think they can complain too much in that regard. I do find it interesting though. I was looking at Sunday Night Football power rankings that just came out, and the Browns, I believe, are 10th, and all four teams that you and I predicted at the beginning of the year to be in the Super Bowl right there in the top eight, I believe. Just to reset that, I had the Chiefs and Niners, and you had the Bills and Cowboys. And, you know, the Bills win over the Chiefs, you know, puts – I mean, the Bills are not out of this. Do not count the Bills out of this.
No, they could win – they could miss the playoffs or they could go to the Super Bowl, right? Like, that's right. I mean, I think that's right there for them. You know,
yeah.
They play Dallas this week. I mean, if they won that game, then it could really take off. But yeah, I feel good about the Dallas pick. I feel really good about the Dallas pick right now. Now they might fall flat on their face, but right now I'm going to take a half a victory lap. But yeah, all four teams are right there.
Yeah. Well, I think I feel pretty good about the Niners.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
You should.
I'll tell you, once the playoffs start, you get a team like the Chiefs, and I know they're struggling, but as long as they have a ticket to the dance, you know, don't count them out. It's funny because, you know, we talked about the point after on Channel 3 with Jimmy Donovan.
Yeah.
And I actually was thinking this on Monday morning during my show on the morning. We, you know, did a recap of the game, and then we showed the standings and then the playoff picture, right? And I remember looking at it thinking, man, Buffalo and Cincinnati down at the bottom. Don't count them out. I thought that in my head. I may have said something on TV. I think I said, you know, don't count the Bengals out because they, you know, we did count them out and they're back. And then I watched the point after, and Jimmy laughed. Great point. Because if the Bengals and the Bills get in, they're teams that know how to win. And that's very dangerous for these other teams if one or both of those teams get in.
Oh, that's a great point, right? Like, if you had to pick between – the Texans and one of those two teams, you would take the I don't care how well CJ Stroud's playing, you'd rather play the Texans with rookie quarterback, rookie head coach, team with no playoff experience. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Do you think we've covered the injuries enough? Is there anything more you need to get into?
Yeah. They keep piling up. Safety is a concern. We don't know if Thornhill's going to play. I'm thinking Delpit's not going to play. So you're looking at, I mean, they finished the game with undrafted rookie Ronnie Hickman and second-year undrafted guy De'Anthony Bell at safety. Now, they have a veteran on the practice squad, Harmon, who's played a bunch of games. He's been around for like 11 years. So that gives them at least somebody that they can put out there with some experience, you know, if they need to activate him. Daron Harmon. He started 79 games, played 164 games in 11 seasons. So at least they have some veteran experience. They already lost Rodney McLeod. So you talk about Justin Fields, and, you know, your safeties have to be good against mobile quarterbacks, right? A guy that can throw the ball down the field. So that's an area to watch. Obviously, we talked about the offensive line. We're just going to have to monitor them throughout the week. And, like, I think most of these guys have a chance to come back at the end of the year, right? And I know there's only four games left, but you feel like maybe Wills comes back. If you get Delpit back, if you get Ward back, like, there's a chance that there's a positive uptick here. But right now, it feels like they're hanging on a little bit.
Yeah. All right. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on this next topic, but certainly I talked about it at the very top. We could talk more about it as the weeks go on. And I think we have pretty much talked about it every week. So I don't think I need a long explanation. But Kevin Stefanski, he's now 9-0 versus the AFC South. I love that stat. I think that's great. But, you know, without getting into too much detail, is he coach of the year right now?
Probably not. Just because, you know, you got DeMeco Ryans in Houston is probably high on that list. You know, maybe even Doug Peterson, you know, might win a division. I think there's other guys that are in the mix. Mike McDaniel, right? Like, there's other guys in that mix. But he should be in the discussion, no doubt. And I'm just going to double down on what I said. It was 4 weeks ago I wrote an analysis on a Tuesday. We talked about it, how I said he's setting himself up for an extension. And I feel more strongly about that now than I did then. Maybe things could go awry enough in the last four games where he doesn't get the extension, right? They lose all four, they finish 8-9, you got questions. But I would not be surprised if they qualified for the playoffs and the next day we hear about Kevin Stefanski getting a contract extension. I think he's been that good. I think not only has been that good with the adversity and with the even keel and winning with four starting quarterbacks, which is almost unheard of. I think he's been really good as a play caller. And I know people like to nitpick. I think he's done a great job. Look at the 3rd-and-1 call. Look at the 4th-and-3 call. The decisions to go for it. The decisions to kick the field goals. I just think he's done a really good job. Above really good. I think he's done a tremendous job across the board.
Yeah. Four quarterbacks. No Nick Chubb. A lot of teams have, like, you know, you look at like the 49ers and it's like, and by the way, I don't know if you've been watching Debo Samuel or not, but I told you that guy changes that team because I know they have Christian McCaffrey. Purdy's great. They have Ayuk. They have George Kittle, but Debo, man, that guy is unbelievable. Just changes the, but the point of the matter is a lot of these teams have multiple weapons, right? Yeah. And the Browns, I mean, Amari Cooper's your number one option. And then Njoku's number two right now. Your fourth quarterback, you're out. Well, you had to bring Kareem Hunt in. You had to bring Flacco in. So all of those things make him no question in the conversation. This is the one thing, in my opinion, that bothers me. And this is where I need to, you know, I always say you need to see it, right? Right. I'm really bothered by their road record. I think you got to learn how to win on the road.
Yeah, that's fair enough, Judd. Just let me play devil's advocate. They should have beaten the Steelers. They turned it over 100 times. Right?
Right.
And they should have beaten the Seahawks, and PJ Walker throws the ball at the guy's helmet. So it's not like they've been outclassed on the road. You know, even the loss to Denver, right? DTR goes, it's 14-12 or whatever the score was. DTR goes out with a concussion. You know, LA, it's 2019. Flacco throws a pick. So yeah, they need to finish those games. Yes, there's reasons for all those losses, but I don't feel like they've gone on the road and gotten embarrassed. Now, the defense, it's pretty significant. Like, it's crazy significant, the statistics from home to road. And part of that is skewed by the turnovers from the offense on the road. But the defense needs to play better. I'm not going to argue the overall point. But I guess my point is I've seen enough positive things on the road where I think they can go win on the road.
Sure. All right. Let's move on to the Bears. I don't think we'll talk too much about them necessarily. They're 5-8. Big win over the Lions. Almost beat them a couple weeks ago. They've won 2 straight and 3 out of 4. Obviously, they have their quarterback back. Their defense is really playing well. This is not a layup, Scott. This is not – I warn fans, and I think people have caught on a little bit, but I think people were chalking this up as a win for sure a couple weeks ago. They're at home. They should win. They're favored by 3. The fact that they're not favored by more should also tell you a little bit.
I agree. I agree. The 3-point spread surprised me, Chud. I thought it'd be 6. I thought it would be. This implies – on a neutral site, that it would be a pick'em game, and the Browns are 8-5, the Bears are 5-8. So I'm surprised by that. We know how smart Vegas is, so I think that's something to keep in mind. They're dangerous. Justin Fields, he's inconsistent, right? I remember watching that Vikings game. They won it, right? The Monday night Vikings game, but there were a bunch of turnovers. I don't think he played great. They win it 12-10, but he makes a play late and they win the game. Then to have to beat a good Detroit team last week pretty handily. I know Detroit struggled a little bit, but that's a good win. So I think they're inconsistent, but I think they have a lot of potential. Fields can make plays with his legs.
He's still there, buddy.
Yeah, I'm here. He can extend plays. I just think Fields is dangerous. The way he can create plays, the way he can throw the ball down the field. They're a dangerous team. I think they're inconsistent. It's no layup, and it's certainly not one that you can take for granted if you're the Browns or the Browns fans.
Yeah, and you can't even make the excuse like, oh, it's a Florida team coming up from the South. Right. Right. I mean, they'll be ready for – and then actually, it's not even going to be that cold. It's not even going to be that bad. So, all right, anything else on the Bears before we get to predictions or anything else you want to hit?
No, I think we got everything, Chubb.
All right. Browns 8-5, Petrak and Chud both 9-4.
Woo.
So we both get the win with picking the Browns over the Jags. And as I mentioned earlier, move that score up a little bit. I think I go first this week, right? Did you go first last week?
I believe that is correct.
All right, I'm going to go first. I'm going to keep it pretty short here. Like I said, definitely be concerned. Wouldn't be surprised. If the Bears somehow pull it out, like, I would not be shocked. But the Browns are the better team. They're at home. And I think hopefully the fans show up. And, they're the X factor and the Browns defense. Another thing about that spread is, the injuries that the Browns have. Yeah. And also, you never know. I mean, the whole Flacco train could fall off the track. It could also keep going. We just don't know. Tough to predict, right? You would think that it could keep going. I'm going to say that it keeps going enough that the Browns get the win 24-20 and they get win number 9.
Yeah, I think you're right on with all that, Chud. It's got to be the injuries, right? When you talk about the spread. And I think you're right. I think it's some Flacco doubt from the odds makers, which I get it. And, maybe we're closer and maybe we see that this is sustainable and there's doubts on the outside, which I would get. I mean, Jake Browning in Cincinnati, I'm thinking to myself, well, can they sustain it with him, right? And at Cincinnati, they're probably like, oh my gosh, they found lightning in a bottle. So it's all perspective. We'll have to see if Flacco continues to play well or not. But I like the ride the Browns are on. I like the fact that they're at home. I like the fact that the Bears are inconsistent. So, yeah, I would be stunned if the Bears won this game. And again, that would not be the end of the world. It's an NFC game, so it's not as big a deal if you lose when you're talking all the tiebreakers that could come into play. But I like the Browns at home. I'm going to take the Browns 27-20.
All right, 24-20 and 27-20.
Yep.
All right, there we go. That gets you to 9 wins with 3 to go. That you're definitely feeling good though heading into those last 3 games if that were to happen,
right? Then you're talking about clinching scenarios, right? Like, I don't know if they it's too far down the road, but like, could they clinch a playoff spot on Christmas Eve in Houston? Like, I think that would be on the table if you beat the Bears. Certainly, you could clinch a spot. You would think the 28th with the Jets at home. So all those things come into play if they beat the Bears. And then if I don't want to get too far ahead, but if the Ravens lost, who did I say they're playing? Miami, or Jacksonville? The Ravens lose in Jacksonville, right? All of a sudden, it's 1.1 game difference in the AFC North, right? So all of this is up in the air, and to me, it's going to be thrilling. Like, you know, my last point is the last couple of years, it's always like, oh, they're on the fringe, right? They need 18 things to happen, but they're not out of it. Now they're right in the heart of it, and all they have to do is win their games, right? And it's a whole different perspective. One that Browns, I mean, they maybe had three times since 2002, right? Where they've been in this position. So I think it's something that people should enjoy.
No doubt. Absolutely. Let's go. I mean, I just think these last few games, man, I just think what it would be like to have playoff football back in Cleveland. I want that home game. Obviously, that will be tough to get, but. You know, we talked about it, I think, a couple weeks ago. Last time the Browns hosted a playoff game, 1995, it was the 94 season, January 1st, 95. Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, man, I just want this town to experience that. I really do.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And, you know, I said that they needed to win the division to get the playoff game, and that's true for the first round. But yeah. if you're the number five seed in the wild card, there's a chance you wind up hosting a game, right?
Sure.
If enough wild card teams win. So that would be cool. I've never covered a playoff game at home. I've never covered a playoff game live, because that COVID year, I covered both of them from home. No, did I go to? I don't know. Maybe I did go to Kansas City for that playoff game. I can't even remember. But it's been a while, regardless.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I mean, we've obviously seen the. I mean, I can. You know, obviously, a lot of people listening can go back to the days of the 80s and what that was like. But, you know, for younger people that weren't around, you know, you think how the Indians ride to the World Series and the Cavaliers and how yeah. crazy this town goes. I just remember in the 80s, man, it was like everywhere you went, orange and brown signs, and you go to the store and just the merchandise, it just feels like it tripled. And lights, and just everyone talked about it. It was incredible back in the 80s. You know, man. Remember?
I do. I was a teenager. It was right in my wheelhouse. I remember thinking to myself, right, that because there was one game. You know, there's 2 weeks between the Super Bowl, right? And I remember thinking to myself when they were playing in the AFC Championship game, how could you wait 2 weeks before the Super Bowl? Like, I couldn't wait for the AFC Championship to get there. I couldn't imagine having to wait 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. It would have been like excruciating.
Oh man, no doubt, Scott. I remember I was 10 with the drive in 85 and 86. I was 11. I'm sorry, and I just remember when the game ended. I don't know if we've ever talked about this. I was like, can we reverse that? Is there any way we could go back and do it over again? Because I was just so upset. I remember going for a walk around the block, you know, and I just – that, man, that was like the first crushing blow. Because I was – Red Right 88, I was only six. So that was like – I mean, you're six, right? That was like – remember the drive was the first real crushing blow. I mean, the Cavs gave us some blows. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think those even came – like what year was the shot? Was that 80?
I thought it was 87. It could be 89.
Yeah, 89. Yeah, right in there. I just that drive, man. That was something else. That was such a punch to the gut. And you know, I always say that was worse than the fumble. The fumble was bad, but the drive was worse for me.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I mean, it's a home game, like 98 yards. I mean, yeah. The only bad and the worst part about the fumble was it was 2 years in a row, right? I mean, that would only tie the game. Like the drive, like people were, I think my family, my aunts, uncles, like they had the champagne out, right? They were ready. And then it gets taken away. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's, well, maybe, you know, hopefully the goal is to try to get there again. Try to get to the AFC Championship and try to eventually get to the Super Bowl. I mean, you hope it would happen sometime in our lifetime, so we'll see.
Yeah. You're right.
All right, that's it for me. I got to go take a nap.
Perfect. Thanks, Chad. As always, thanks everybody for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.